Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so I share strategies and ideas. I tell stories about things that worked for me, but some of those big epic fails that I've learned from. I interview experts and I share big ideas, and all because I truly believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And on today's episode, we're going to be talking about theory. Now, I know on the surface theory can sound boring, but trust me, it is not boring. It's actually really exciting. I know in the past when I was younger and kind of a new teacher, I would say things like, oh, don't bother with theory, just focus on practical strategies. But when theory is done well, it can be a roadmap or a framework that we use. It can be a nuanced dialogue that cuts to the core of why we do what we do. The problem is that we as educators are sometimes really busy and the research and the theory can feel dense. But with generative AI, it's easier than ever to access theory and research in a way that is practical and relevant. And on this topic, I want to share something about our sponsor. So today's episode is sponsored by Consensus. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about this tool that I found that will change how students find and learn about science. And when I say science, it's in a broad sense. It's kind of like what they learn about everything. It's a search engine specializing in science questions, and this is called, again, Consensus. And it's a phenomenal tool both for students but also for educators. Every answer shows you exactly which scientific paper the information came from. You can search for things in plain English, ask questions, and add instructions for the answer to be simplified, to be formatted differently, or even made into a rhyme, although I don't always recommend that particular one. Imagine a version of Google Scholar combined with ChatGPT that high schoolers can easily use, and it's 100% reliable and based on actual research papers. And AI is fundamentally changing how we as humans find, understand, and interact with information. The problem with LLMs, or large language models, is that they are trained on the whole internet, right? A massive set of data. And this also includes a lot of misinformation. And we don't get to see the exact sources of what it's telling us. And so it can feel a little bit opaque. There's often hallucinations involved, completely made up fabrications. You get the idea. You've probably heard some of those stories. Well, Consensus is powered by AI, but it is grounded in science and research. Consensus only uses the 200 million scientific research papers in its database to create answers. And it clearly shows you which papers contribute to an answer. Researchers and students from over 5,000 schools and universities worldwide already use Consensus. It is a tool that I use. It's a tool I'm a big fan of. And so you can search Consensus for free. Go to consensus.app and let your curiosity go. The Consensus mission is to democratize access to the world's best information. I do want to make a quick disclaimer that I mention Consensus at the end of this podcast episode as my favorite app to use for accessing research. And I want to point out that even though they are a sponsor today, they did not write any of the copy. They did not tell me what to put in this article for this week or what to put into the podcast. They did not control any of the editorial decisions related to it. I just happen to be a big fan of using Consensus as a way to access research and theory. And so that's why you'll hear about them a little bit later on in this podcast episode. Years ago, when I was doing my dissertation, I fell in love with theory. I know that sounds odd. I had always seen theory as important, but also, well, kind of boring and a little stale. I knew that education theory mattered, but I treated it like a foundational element that you then built the fun stuff on top of. It was the educational equivalent of, say, rebar, concrete, and steel, right? Important, but not exactly fun. However, when I began working on my dissertation and on the lit review that was required within it, I discovered the sheer joy of taking a deep dive into theory and research. Although I knew so much of the research on project-based learning, I never thought too deeply about things like motivation and self-efficacy and how those connected to PBL. If anything, I had this like simplified view that self-efficacy was simply the belief that you could accomplish a task, and motivation was the desire to accomplish a task. And that wasn't wrong, but it was certainly, well, incomplete. It lacked deeper nuance that I then discovered as I took a deep dive into these core concepts. Again, I never made the distinction between attribution theory, how one defines the success of a task, and self-efficacy, for example. And I had this very strict view of intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation that failed to grasp this idea of autonomous motivation, controlled motivation, and what that looked like under something called self-determination theory. Now, I gotta say, self-determination theory is something that I am excited about. I'm actually gonna make a sketch video related to it. If you go to spencervideos.com, you'll see that when it comes out. And it's this idea of external regulation, I'm doing something because I have to. Introjection, I'm doing something out of a sense of guilt avoidance or ego involvement. Identification, it's personally important. It's conscious valuing for me. It allows me to do goal accomplishment, that kind of stuff. Integration, it's the synthesis of my identity. It's who I am. It's internal. And then true intrinsic motivation, I'm doing this out of a sense of enjoyment because I like it, right? So why does this matter? Why would it be important that I now have this more nuanced view of everything from motivation to efficacy to attribution to autonomy to agency, all of those things? Well, actually, I've learned that this is really important on a practical level. Understanding that motivation is task-specific, for example, has helped me see that I often shift between these different aspects of self-determination continuum on a single project. There are times I'm a little bit motivated by ego. Other times I seem to be just lost in the process and enjoying it completely. I'm often doing this out of a sense of integration. This is who I am. And I often do it out of a sense of accomplishing a goal and seeing something work out successfully. And so doing this process has helped me really think about what do I feel right now and how does that connect to what really exists out there in terms of motivation. It's also helped me see the downside of things like self-efficacy. For example, if your self-efficacy is too high, you tend to make dumb mistakes because you're overconfident and you don't pay attention to the small mistakes you make. It's why, for example, you are likely to crash your car within 1 mile of your house versus in a city that you've never visited before. And so that's a small example of why theory matters. Now, at a classroom level, once I really understood this notion of self-efficacy and motivation, it becomes a part of how I plan my lessons. It has changed the way that I teach. So I want to share a few reasons why theory is important. Number one, theory provides a foundation for practical information. Theory is all around us if we're paying attention, right? Theories answer the bigger why questions, which can then drive our how. Our theories allow us to make sense out of the way things work, and they give us evidence. So I love, for example, UX design theory because it has given me this practical framework to think about the way that I design lessons, resources, the way that I set up my courses, all of that. I love Philip Schlechte's levels of engagement, and that, again, is a theory about how engagement works in terms of attention and commitment. And I have used that model so many times to make sense out of the engagement of my own students. And in fact, I use it in the surveys that I give them each night when I teach. So it gives us those frameworks and models. Number two, theory provides nuance. What I love about theory is that when you take a deep dive into the actual research, you learn about the limitations of the theories, you learn what's generalizable and what's not. And when I was thinking about motivation and intrinsic and extrinsic, I began to gain a more nuanced perspective when I started thinking about how those related to things like growth and fixed mindsets, or when I started taking a deeper dive into how this related to task attribution and agency and some of those core ideas that aren't about motivation necessarily, but they connect to it. And it gave me just this bigger, fuller perception of the way that learning works. And what it really did is it helped me slip out of the false binaries that exist in education. You might hear, for example, direct instruction is good or direct instruction is bad, right? We shouldn't be lecturing. Inquiry-based learning is good. Inquiry-based learning is bad. We should only teach phonics. We don't need background information. The blended literacy doesn't work. We shouldn't do that. Balanced literacy doesn't work. We shouldn't do it. And you hear these binaries of this is bad, this is good. But when you take a deep dive into theory, you often find that the bigger question is not, is this good or bad, but when is this theory true? When is this research applicable? And is this true? And it allows for a deeper, more humble sense of understanding the way learning works. And that is the third point. Theory has this ability to humble us. One of the things I love about theory is that it lets you know what you don't know. Number four, theory reminds us that ideas happen in community. One of the things that I run into all the time as I start doing the research is just how many researchers out there are doing the work. If you think about self-efficacy, you might think of Bandura, for example, but what you'll find is that there are a lot of different people doing research on self-efficacy, and many of those people influence Bandura as well. And that Bandura's ideas of self-efficacy were formed in a post-war America coming out of a certain phase and sort of connected to this era of humanistic psychology. And so what I love is that it reminds us that these things happen in a time and a place, and that they're rooted in community. The fifth idea is that theory keeps us from mistaking novelty for innovation. It keeps us from just chasing the flashy and new ideas and focusing instead on what is better and different. And so understanding educational theory helps us avoid the trap of following the latest fads. We're able to see that certain great ideas are older, and that's okay. And I love that because certain things that seem to be trendy, for example, project-based learning, right, has actually been around since around 1905, 1910, and it is not a new idea. Number six, theory gives us a critical lens. It helps us think in a more critical, in a good way, in terms of critical way, about the work that we're doing, about the things that we see, about the professional development that we attend, all of that. There are a lot of bad ideas in education that somehow persist. For example, I've met people who still believe that there's a left brain or a right brain, or I hear about learning styles. And what I love about theory and what I love about research is it can debunk some of those ideas that turn out not to be relevant and that turn out not to be grounded in any kind of evidence. And then finally, number seven, theory gives us evidence for the work that we do. Ultimately, we know that education theory, when we really embrace it, we're able to have evidence to back up the work that we do. But we also know that there's limitations to the evidence. We know, for example, that when there are tons of complex variables at work in teaching, we can't simply make a list of good practices and bad practices. Even Hattie, who kind of gained quite a name for himself in terms of having this idea of effect size related to different strategies, has walked that back a little bit and said, actually, when that strategy is combined with that strategy, it leads to more success. For example, inquiry-based learning has a low effect size unless there is a concept attainment lesson ahead of time, you front load vocabulary, you build background knowledge, you tap into curiosity. And what he did is he demonstrated that these things are not standalone, right? That the strategies that we use interact with one another. And that's sort of the fun and the artistry involved in the science of educational research and theory. The more we understand theory, the more we're able to see that there are huge elements of teaching that can't be addressed simply by theory alone. Teaching is deeply relational and contextual, which means all theories will be tempered by our collective experiences. All right, so how does this relate to AI? Well, we often hear the terms research-based or data-driven to describe all kinds of different educational practices. A quick perusal of X, for example, will tell you that direct instruction is better than discovery-based, play-based, project-based, inquiry-based, any of those learning approaches, because that's what the quote research says. A stream of messages offer simplistic descriptions of the science of reading and often fail to recognize the research about prior knowledge, vocabulary, motivation, grammar, all of those key factors that can actually lead to someone's success in reading as well. With so many pundits using the term research says to justify different practices, it can be tough to figure out what the research well actually says. And that's why I love using AI as a tool to synthesize research. Again, I mentioned that I love using consensus, and I want to make that disclaimer. What I'm going to share right now is not coming from them. This is my own perspective. If you're not familiar, Consensus is an app built on an LLM that functions as a chatbot. You can ask a question and you get nuanced answers with these direct links to journal articles. You can ask follow-up questions and you can have it simplify the descriptions. You can ask for specific strategies that connect to the research it just summarized. And so there you have it. You can chase your curiosity, ask follow-up questions, and eventually say, okay, but what does this look like in a fourth grade classroom, for example? In other words, it becomes a conversation where you chase your curiosity and you develop more nuanced, deeper views of the research. And unlike most chatbots, again, it's not vulnerable to hallucinations where it's just gonna make things up. So what does it look like, right? How would it actually work to use this? Imagine you're new to project-based learning and you hear that it's an ineffective teaching strategy. You heard someone tell you that the research says it doesn't lead to academic achievement, it causes cognitive overload. But then when you go into the Consensus app, you'll discover it's a lot more nuanced. There's gonna be a whole bunch of studies that demonstrate the positive role in specific areas in terms of academic achievement. You might read some of the articles, ask some of the follow-up questions, and you'll begin to build that background knowledge that you need to understand why PBL works. You might ask a follow-up question to Consensus, something like, are there times when PBL doesn't work? And here you might be asking, what are those standards where we wouldn't want to use PBL? And what you find is that it'll tell you about some of those challenges of extraneous cognitive load. It'll mention that there are certain skill-based things that are not well aligned to PBL. It might mention that there are things that need to be taught in a more systematic way. And again, what you gain is this deeper understanding of PBL. Now, this might seem a little too theoretical, but it's drilling into the why before you get into the how. You can then ask for specific strategies for reducing cognitive load in PBL, and it's going to describe very specific strategies for dual coding, using templates, using protocols, creating a roadmap. And what you end up doing is developing a deeper understanding of the research, but also you're left with very specific strategies that you as an educator can use in your classroom. And to me, that's really exciting. Ultimately, AI is not going to replace the need for reading research on your own. And I'm a huge fan of checking out journal articles and things like that. But the reality is, time is scarce. We can't always synthesize all of that information. And AI is really good at synthesizing key information. So that's one of the things I love, is using AI to summarize, synthesize, allow you to take a deeper dive into the research, follow up your questions on the research, and ultimately develop a deeper understanding of the why behind the how of what you're doing. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor, if you enjoy it, would you leave a review on Apple Podcast or on Spotify or wherever it is that you get your podcast? Also, tell a friend about this podcast. That's one of the best ways, is still just word of mouth. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.